The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
All right. My name is Scott Ellsworth, not Vina, sitting in guest hosting. Tonight, great show. We are going to answer your questions regarding lending and also borrowing, which would be the flip side of that. For tonight, our guest, great friend of mine, Darren Carey, with Dayton Capital Partners out of Dayton. And he's going to help answer those questions about lending. How you doing, Darren?
Doing good. How are you, Scott?
Good. Why don't you tell the everybody a little bit about yourself, how long you've been in the business of lending, and
Okay. So a little bit of background. I've been a real estate investor for a little over 20 years, and I started off kind of the same way most everybody else did. I started off landlording. Then I moved on to rehabbing once I ran out of down payment money to buy more rentals. Then I learned about wholesaling, started wholesaling. And along the way, I used some private money, and I also did a little bit of dabbling in private money. And once we built up our rental portfolio where it was, maybe about 7 years ago or so, I started doing more and more private lending, and it's taken off in ways I never expected. So it's become a very large part of what I do on a day-to-day basis now.
That's great. I did want to tell everybody that if you have a question and you haven't sent it in to the email, you can call the station, 877-772-9658. That's 877-772-9658 if you have a question. The first question we have, Darren, is from Jane. What paperwork docs does a private money lender ask for typically, and what do they require, and do they require tax returns from the borrower?
That is entirely up to the private money lender. I know people that require almost nothing, and, well, I don't recommend doing that. I do recommend people get something. So I've had people loan me money because they know me by reputation. They've literally asked for nothing. No credit report, no documentation, no tax returns, not even a bank statement. I've learned that for me as a lender, that doesn't work for me, especially because I get a fair number of people coming in that I don't know. So I'm going to typically ask for a tax return, last few bank statements, and I'm going to spend a lot of time talking with the person and discussing them, their project, the character, making sure the numbers of the project make sense and that it fits into their investing goals and their plans going forward to make sure it actually is going to help them. So a little different than just a pure private lender, here's money, go do your deal. Hey, let me help you do your deal and advance your investing.
That's good, and you made a good point. You know, you got to a point with certain lenders when you wanted to borrow, they knew you. You had a reputation of doing what you said you were going to do, and they trusted you much more. They still did the necessary things they need to do to protect their money, but they are ready to do a deal because they know you can do it. So I would say that anybody out there who's looking to borrow from private lenders, you know, you have to have that that character and the integrity to do what you say you're going to do. You build up that trust, and they don't ask for as much. They know you're a man of your word or a man or woman of your word.
Right, and that was, you know, it's kind of old school because it used to be, you know, character was a huge part of borrowing money or choosing who you lend to, and then they came up with, you know, credit scores, and now they just kind of substitute the credit score instead of character, which I kind of disagree with.
Sure. So we have another question. It's from Amtul. It says, hi, I want to buy a property and sell it on a land contract to my contractor, which the property needs work. How do I structure that deal so that I can do it?
Actually, that's really simple because I'm actually closing on something exactly like that on Friday. So there's an exemption to Dodd-Frank. So Dodd-Frank limits how many loans and how you can lend to owner-occupants. So there are restrictions there. So if the contractor is going to live in the house, fix it, and live in it, there's some rules you have to follow. Fortunately, there are some exemptions for, depending who you talk to, 1 to 3 properties in a 12-month period. So a one-off will be fine. If the contractor is going to flip the property, then it's a typical deal. There's no restrictions. You simply buy the property, and the next hour, you write up a land contract, close the same title company, and do the land contract that way. The fun part is the land contract is how do you put the terms of the land contract of what do you want this contract to read? How much does he pay every month? What's the interest rate? What's the purchase price? When are the payments due? And what's all those pieces that go into an agreement that effectively a land contract is effectively a loan or treated as such.
Okay. So good. So there's different ways to structure it. Obviously, that's a land contract. There's probably other ways to structure a deal where, you know, you would actually just sell it outright to them and then take a mortgage.
So if I had somebody who was going to do, let's call it a work for equity kind of a deal, because that term's used a lot. So if he's going to do all the work in there, but he's effectively doing no down payment, yeah, I'm probably going to go with a lease option or a land contract, because if something goes wrong, I can take the property back easier.
I got you.
If the guy's coming in and he's going to put 20-25% down, I might as well skip the land contract and just do a mortgage and note, because if it goes bad, I'm going to have to foreclose, whether it's a land contract or a mortgage and a note.
So let's be a little help the listeners. So if I have a land contract, when do I have to foreclose, and when can I just somewhat evict them?
So first disclosure, I'm not an attorney. I've never played an attorney on TV.
Right.
So please consult, get professional advice.
Agreed.
In my experience, is if the land contract has gone for more than 5 years, or they have paid down, or there's more than 20% of the purchase price from the time it was originated. So if you wrote a land contract, hey, I'm going to sell you this property on a land contract for $100,000. You're going to give me $10,000 down, and over the next couple of years, they've paid down another $10,000 on the balance owed. You're going to have to foreclose.
Okay.
That's the way Ohio law goes. If they put $3,000 down on a $100,000 land contract, you can effectively evict them. However, you've got to give them additional notices. So it'll take a little longer to get the eviction started.
Gotcha.
I think there's a 30-day notice and a 7-day notice, and they're required.
Okay. All right, so we're going to take a quick break here. In the meantime, if you want to call in, 877-772-9658. All right, welcome back. Again, number to call in if you have questions regarding lending and borrowing, 877-772-9658. Got my good friend Darren Carey here with us. I did want to also mention, just before we get started again, this coming, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday on, I think, the 13th. So there is Cincinnati REIA is going to be having a Saturday session. Typically, they run from 9 to 3. You can go to CincinnatiREIA.com. And that's that day they're going to talk about how to get your phones to ring off the hook. So if you're just starting into your real estate adventure, I recommend that one. So that would help you to get started with that. Plus, they're going to have one, how to make money with vacant land. So vacant land is a great area. I did a couple of vacant lots that I flipped years ago. So they can be very profitable. So So Darren, we are back, and I have a question on our. And it says this is from Janine. So she has an acre of unimproved land in Arizona worth about $10,000. So if I needed $70,000 towards the purchase of a property in Maryland to hold as a rental, or if I needed $70,000 for a rehab, Can I use that land to secure the loan in either of these cases? So, and her another question is, does the value of the land need to equate to the loan amount? And there's another one, but go, let's start with that.
Okay, so on the land side, typically I'm going to do a lower loan to value. So a $10,000 parcel of land, I probably wouldn't even do a loan on that.
Sure.
It's just the hassle of taking it back if it goes bad is simply not worth it. Now, if it was, you know, something of a different value, let's say you've got a $200,000 parcel of land, you got, you know, 20 acres out somewhere in Ohio or some, and who knows. Then I might lend about half of that money. So land is, it's just, it's treated a little differently than a property. If I have to take a back a parcel of land, it might take me a little longer to resell it and to recoup those funds. So I'm going to have higher costs of all of that. So I'm just going to lend a little less.
Well, it's particularly in this case, she's got a $10,000 parcel, but she's saying I need to borrow $70K. So what is, what,
right.
Again, to purchase a property to do a rehab, what is going to be her collateral probably for that note?
It's going to have to be the rehab property.
Okay, and with the rehab property, what typically are the, what's going to make it a deal you can do?
So the typical deal on a rehab property, now assuming this is, let's say, a new acquisition, I'm going to look for someone to bring some money to the table, which is most often 25% of the purchase price. That's their skin in the game. After that, I will typically fund the rest of that purchase and all the renovations. Now, because there's disgustingly cheap houses available in Dayton, Springfield, Cincinnati, and areas like that, if you find one of those, there are some minimums that apply. So you're always going to put at least $15,000 down towards the property.
Sure.
Now, in lieu of cash, I will accept equity in other properties. So I've got a guy right now, he put up his free and clear rental property instead of doing a cash down payment for his new acquisition. And then when he refinances the new property, that other property will get paid off and it'll go back to being free and clear for him. So that's another way to do that.
Okay. So one thing she makes comment to is, I don't have any other assets. If I don't have any other assets, my credit score is 650. So the question was, would the land be helpful to being approved? And basically you've already said that, hey, it's probably not worth the hassle to for a lender to put any kind of a mortgage on it because it's a 10K parcel out in Arizona. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is correct. And this might be something what maybe you structure it differently. Maybe you find someone who can come in and do a JV with you or some kind of a partnership or something other than just a straight loan. Because a straight loan is not always the best answer.
Right. So basically, I mean, for...
No.
Good.
Now, if it's a property that she already owns, and there's already equity into the property that because she already owns it, then that comes into play. If somebody has a property like, hey, I own this property, it's worth about $150, I don't have a mortgage on it, but I need $70 so I can rehab it and resell it for $350, I'll do that all day long.
Okay. So with that in mind with getting a loan, so in this case for her, you know, she needs $70K to purchase a property or she's going to do a rehab on maybe an existing property. Basically, that's going to be the collateral for her. The $10K really doesn't do much asset-wise. How does credit score affect the loans?
Well, it depends. Now, that's going to vary tremendously by lender. So I have what I do. Other lenders have different standards. So, for example, a lot of your national lenders, your hard money lenders, they're going to have minimum scores. So one lender might be 680, another one might be 620, and their interest rates and loan-to-values may vary according to what your credit score is. Typically, when I look at it, I look at the credit score, but I put very, very little weight on the credit score. I want to see what drives that credit score. So if I look at a 650, it might be just like, oh, yeah, I've got a couple of credit cards with high balances, but I have a perfect payment history. Rock on. That's great. That's fantastic. I love that. Other times, if I look at someone who's got a really low credit score, like a 480, you got to really work to get down to a 480.
So I would say.
Yeah. So the odds of me doing anything with that are very low. However, I have done it because I did a $30,000 loan on a $150,000 house. It was free and clear. Okay, I'll take that chance. And he was very motivated to make sure that work got done, and he got it resold. So it worked out for both of us.
So let's, first of all, let me just repeat the phone number, 877-772-9658, to call in if you have a question. Would love to take those live questions. So in the meantime, what, so when a lender, when somebody comes to borrow from you, what are the documents? Well, let's step back. What are the requirements? I mean, you said on the one loan you do with the 25% down, that's their skin in the game. But what do they need on the other part? Do they need, besides the property, do they need other collateral? Do they have to have a history of, let's say they're going to do a flip and they're going to rehab a property? Do they have to have a history to get a loan with you? What are some of the things that they need to think about so that they can be in a good position to get a loan? What are the things that, hey, if you've got X, Y, and Z, you're going to have a really tough time?
Yeah. So the biggest things I'm going to look at is I want answers to two questions. One, are you going to pay me back? Of course. But two, are you capable of completing this project? Do you have the experience level that this project requires? You know, a simple light rehab or swapping out kitchens and a bathroom, any first-timer can handle that. Picking a house up and replacing a foundation, setting the house down, that's not typical for a first-time rehabber. So I'm going to look at that with the experience level that says, yes, I can do this project, or I've done projects like this, now I'm adding a couple more things to it. Yeah, I've done some rehabs, now I'm doing a foundation repair, or, you know, things along that nature. So everything is driven to helping that borrower to succeed through the process. Does the scope of work match what needs to be done? Do you have enough money in the scope of work? Are you doing too much? Are you over improving the property? So making sure the right things are being done. How are the numbers on it? What is your after repaired value? How much will it cost in your scope of work to get there? How much are you paying for the property? How much margin are you leaving for overhead and profit? And putting those pieces together. And then we'll look at, and this is back to that credit report of, if you have a history of paying people back, then I expect that to continue. If you have a history of, oh, look, you've never paid anyone back on time in your life, you're probably not going to start with me. So that's right. Probably going to be negative in your part. So to make it easy, know the numbers, be able to bring the numbers in. I generally want people to bring me 40, 50, 60 pictures of the property. Give me a virtual tour. Help me help you through this project. Then after that, it's just, you know, putting the paperwork together that says, you know, here, oh, I need an LLC. I have an LLC. Here's my operating agreement. Here's the tax returns. And I use that for verifications of certain things. Here's some bank statements that show I've got money to work with. You know, it's pretty simple at that point.
So if I'm going to come, I'm going to borrow money from you, tell me what are the documents. We're going to be able to answer part of this question, then we'll probably be close to a break. But what are the documents? What do I have to have? Like, I don't want to do the thing where I give you one thing and then you ask for another and then I give you that and then another. What's the package I need to bring to you for me to be successful borrowing and for you to be a successful lender lending to me?
The purchase agreement, your scope of work, comps for the property value as it is, comps for the property as it's going to be, so the ARV. So that's helping analyze the deal. What's the scope of work that's going to get there? What needs to be done? And this is usually an estimate. There's usually not contractor quotes. If you have an LLC, I need your LLC documentation, an operating agreement, piece of cake. Individually, I need your driver's license. I want one tax return, and I want to see three of your personal bank statements. And if you have a business account, three of your business bank statements. And there's some forms to e-sign, you know, a W-9, and, you know, typical government kind of stuff that you got to do.
Sure.
But that's it. It's really very, very simple.
Okay.
It's just about determining, can you handle the deal? Do the numbers work? And does it end well for everybody? You pay me back. You advance your investing career. You acquire a rental property. You get a flip. You make a profit. You know, how does this help everybody move forward?
Great. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. Again, the number to call, 877-772-9658. We'll be right back. All right. Welcome back. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm Scott Ellsworth, your guest host today. I wanted to point out that Cincinnati RIA is having an event, two Saturdays from, or well, Saturday, about a week and a half, next Saturday, the 13th. It's a day 9 to 3, how to get your phone ringing off the hook with motivated sellers, which is key to building a real estate, depending on your strategy, and how to make money with vacant land. So encourage you to go to CincinnatiRIA.com and sign up for that session. Those are good, not very expensive. They're great. So I am here with Darren Carey, who owns Dayton Capital Partners, and he does lending. So, Darren, what I'd like to do maybe for the next part of the show is talk about if I want to be a lender, right? So what are the things I need to do, right? I mean, everything from you got to have money to be a lender. Where does the money have to be? Can I get it from my retirement accounts? Does it need to be on my own accounts? And then, to be successful, what do I need to do when I'm doing due diligence for a borrower? Because I don't want to get stuck with a property. Generally, some lenders would love to have the property back, but I generally don't want to get stuck. So I want to be a successful lender. It's a passive activity generally, right? With lending. And so, I mean, in theory, it should be, but so let's just explore the lending side. How do I become a lender? What do I need to have, and how do I do the due diligence so that I'm successful?
So, being a direct lender, a private lender, and doing the deals, you're doing the origination yourself. That is nothing near passive. It's work. Okay, so let's just be clear. It's work. But to be successful, we talked earlier about all those things that I require, those documents coming in, is now I'm going to use those things to analyze the deal. Now, in my case, I'm using 20-some-odd years of experience in real estate investing and using that to analyze the deal, say, is this a good deal? Is my money secure? So that's the first part. As a lender, too, you have to determine what your lending criteria are going to be. For example, I decided 25% down on a purchase, on the purchase price only. I know other private lenders may not require anything down. Some private lenders may require 25% down on both the purchase and the rehab. That's up to the individual lender. So you have to determine what all those criteria are going to be. How much are you going to charge? What's the interest rate? How long do they have to pay me back? How do they pay me back? And all that has to go into the paperwork. So you've got to do a mortgage and a note, and you absolutely positively have to have an attorney for the state you're lending in help you with those pieces. The other thing is you absolutely positively must close with a title company or an attorney if you're in an attorney state, and make sure the title search is clean and to make sure everything gets recorded correctly. I've seen far too many instances of people who have just wanted to be a private lender, wrote somebody a check for 20, 30 grand, 50 grand, didn't do any paperwork, or did poor paperwork, and then just lost their money. Because they had nothing, when it went bad, they had no way to go out and say, oh, you owe me, and I have this collateral to try to take back. So you've got to get the paperwork right in the analysis of those things that come in. So there's a bunch of things I look for on the bank statement. There's things that I look for on a tax return. If somebody tells me they have 5 or 6 rental properties, I'm looking on that tax return for that Schedule E to look for 5 or 6 rental properties. I'm using that to verify the information I've collected from them. Just same thing with the bank statements. They tell me, hey, I've got 50 grand in the bank. Great, show me. And every document goes like that. The driver's license, does it match the name on my application, doesn't match the name on the bank statement, doesn't match the name on the tax return. All those pieces. You'd be amazed at what people will try.
That does just sound crazy. Absolutely. So what do they, so I could be a lender. It sounds like I've got to do, I mean, I need, if I'm going to do it myself, there's just a lot of checklist and potentially I don't have any experience, right?
It's a skill.
So
it's a skill set. It's a learned skill.
So how do I get that? How do I get that skill? Do I go to somebody? Do I take a course? What do I do?
So there's a couple options. Actually, Rhea periodically does a class, a Saturday session on lending. So I went to one of those. It was a 6 or 7 hour class on a Saturday. That was fantastic. That helped me get started and understand some of the concepts. The other thing is you can always do like I did and do it the hard way and just start doing it and screw it up and figure it out.
That can be expensive.
It is. so let's just say some of those first loans I did not go well. Not so much because I didn't do the paperwork right. I had the paperwork right because I went to that class and I learned that piece of it. But my criteria and qualifications were wrong. So I can look back at all the loans I've done, and almost every time somebody had no money in the deal that was theirs, those universally are the ones that have gone bad. And
were they,
now that
they
doesn't
had no
mean that all
they,
of them went bad.
So you're saying they had no skin in the game.
They had no skin in the game. Of all the deals I've done until one that's going bad right now, every deal, that was the common factor. No skin in the game. Now, some of the people that didn't have skin in the game actually did well and completed the deal. But that was more the exception than the rule. And everybody started with good intentions. Now, I do have one guy now that's just a knucklehead, and he's decided to stop paying, and, he's just a knucklehead. What can I say?
Do you require that?
So the class is the first part. Learn the paperwork. Then you've got to learn how to evaluate the deal, the criteria, determine how much skin in the game you want, if any, and then you go about that. If you just totally want to be passive, you can simply buy a note from someone else who's originated it, like us, and then you can be passive because someone else has done all that front-end work, and now you get to just collect the interest. So now you're skipping the work. Now it becomes a passive investment for you. So that truly is passive at that point.
Gotcha. Do you require the borrowers to have reserves? So you hear a lot about the fact that, you know, somebody starts a rehab or they even have a rental property. They don't have any money set aside, and then something happens. So so there's a lot of discussion about, hey, you need to have reserves for you know, set aside, money set aside that you can access so that if a deal goes south, right, you've got some money. Do you require reserves?
Absolutely. And I look at reserves in three different ways. The first is on the scope of work, one of the line items, you know, we're going to replace kitchen, $7,500, you know, whatever it is. But the last line item is always contingency or, what we, you know, it's the, oh, crap, something came up. And we always make sure there's some thousands of dollars there available. So it's already built in the loan and available. So that's one piece of reserve. That's part of your contingency for we found something unexpected. The second piece I'm going to look into is back to those bank statements and cash is how do you make your interest payment next month? How do you pay for utilities? How do you pay your contractors while you're waiting for those draws to come in? How much working capital do you have? How long can you afford to carry this if you can't sell it? If you've only got 3 months reserves, that's really not enough. You've got to be planning. You've got to be out there like 6, 8, 9 months. That's kind of your typical flip for an early investor is going to take that long. The other piece of reserves can be things like a home equity line of credit. Like one of the ones I'm going to close next week, the people have a home equity line of credit on their personal residence. They're using a very small piece of it just to finish the down payment. But they've got another $20,000, $30,000 sitting there. That's their contingency fund. That's the, oh, if something goes wrong, we can tap the line of credit and we can go that way. So all those pieces come into play. The fourth one that I will actually consider sometimes is someone, if they're a little light on the physical reserves of those types is if they've got a great income and they're regularly, you know, saving a couple thousand dollars a month into their savings account or $1,000 a month in their savings account, then I can look and count some of that too. It's like, okay, you have extra income coming in that doesn't, that you don't spend every month. Again, now the bank statements help me with that part. So all those pieces come together just to make sure that the people can afford to carry the property through to a successful conclusion.
So on like bank statements, so what are you looking for on the bank statements? For instance, if I'm a borrower, if I'm a rehabber, maybe I've got money, I've got, you know, 100,000 coming in that month, but then 100,000 goes out. So I, you know, there's a 2,000 balance at the beginning of the month and 2,000 balance at the end of the month. So
yep.
What are you looking for? You look, the kinds of things on the bank statements, because I think a borrower needs to understand whether their bank statements are good for borrowing or are they bad?
So in the bank statements, though, way back in the day, I used to teach personal finance. So bank statements tell me a story. And the business bank statements tell me one story. Your personal bank statements tell me a different story. I can look at your business and see how your business is going. I can see, oh, you've got a rehab expense. Oh, this was a draw coming in. This was your rent that you collected. These were things you put out. And as you pointed out, I can look at what your balance was at the beginning of the month, the end of the month, and carry that through and say, oh, look, they started off with, you know, yeah, they had 100,000 come in, but they only had 95 go out. The next month they had 95 come in, they only had 90 go out. So they're going up 5 every month. This is good. If you're going down, that's bad. Neutral, generally, I don't think neutral is good either, but sometimes there's good reasons for it. So the bank statement is just one piece of the picture. There might be a reason why they're, you know, bringing 100 grand in a month and 100 grand's going out. Maybe they have active rehabs going on and they literally are, you know, cycling it through that fast. Do they have a property coming up for sale? Oh, I have this one, you know, it's, we've got it pending, it's under contract, and it's supposed to close on Tuesday. Oh, okay, so there's your reserves coming from there. So there's a lot of different pieces that go into it.
I got you. So we are going to take a break. Remember, the number to call if you have a question, 877-772-9658. We'll see you in a little bit. All right, welcome back to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I'm your host, Scott Ellsworth. We have our guest, Darren Carey, here answering lending questions. Let me just mention two things before I forget by the end of the show. One, a Saturday session on the 13th, so not this Saturday, but the following Saturday, how to get your phone ringing off the hook with motivated sellers. And how to make money with vacant land. That runs from 9 to 3. The other thing I wanted to point out, which I haven't talked about yet, is a lot of the information, good information and good networking, happens at the OREA National Summit, Real Estate Summit, that's held in Cincinnati, up in Mason, the Great Wolf Lodge. So this year it's going to start on October 31st, so Halloween night. It will start, and that'll go through from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's a great chance to get educated and do a lot of networking and make some good contacts. So, again, we are back with Darren Carey, Dayton Capital Partners. We're talking about lending, borrowing. And so
let me interrupt you a second for Scott. I want to just reiterate what you said about the RIA. The National Summit, I will be there again this year. This will be my 20th year in a row going to that. The RIAs, I've attended the RIA meeting every month since 2005. So that's over 20 years now. That's where the education is. That's where the network is. That's where you can find people to help you. It is absolutely critical to your success as a real estate investor is getting those good people around you. Yes, you can do it on your own the hard way, but why do it the hard way when there's an easier, better way?
Agreed.
End of plug.
And you're local, you know, no matter where you are in the country. So we have people listening all over the country. I think there's some internationally listening to us. I would encourage you to, you know, make sure you're joining a local RIA, or if you don't find one nationally that you like. It's community. It's all about community. That's the way you're going to success. When I'm at meetings, virtually or in person, you can ask everybody in the audience, your deals, are they done with people in this room? And I would say 50 to 60% of those hands go up, and that's where they get a lot of deals done. So I think it's really important on that end of it. Which brings a good segue into it. How do I find private lenders? So I'm doing rehab, or I'm doing, which we haven't really talked about, is like a buy and hold. A lot of people don't do flips, right? They use a buy and hold. So maybe there's two questions. Right. One, how do I find private lenders? And what are the opportunities to borrow out there besides a bank for when I'm going to actually buy and hold a property for a rental?
Okay, so two parts to that answer. The first part is defining what is a private lender. So I'm a, quote, technically I'm a private lender, but I'm really closer to a hard money lender. I'm a private money lender with standards. Okay, so I specialize hard money bridge loans. I do occasionally do a long-term one. Then you have the other hand, that what everybody dreams of is a true private lender, somebody who's never been to a RIA. They don't even know they could lend on a house and lend money to you. And they'd be thrilled to lend you at 6, 7, 8% versus the rates I charge as a hard money lender. And they might be thrilled to do that for you for 10, 15, 20 years. But that's where you have to coach them, help them, educate them, treasure them, and take very, very good care of them, because it's absolutely worth it.
And a lot of times,
to find those people, that's networking. That's talking to people where, you know, where do you go? Do you go to church? Do you have people at work? So it's finding that other network of people that are outside of RIA for the true private lenders. In RIA, the, quote, hard money lenders like me and others, we set up tables in the back of the room. We're there to be found. That's easy. But there's also, if you look around the room, if you look at the experienced people that are there, they may also do some private lending, but they're going to be much closer to what I am as a private money lender with standards than what, you know, Uncle Bob might be that is just helping out his favorite nephew.
Okay. So I do have a question which sort of dovetails into that, which I think we just answered. So Joel asks, hello, do you have a contact I can – do you have a contact – I can contact directly about money for property deals. What I would say, Darren, where would you tell him to go? We're not going to give out people's names for this, but how, where is he going to repeat? Where does he go to find those?
I'm sorry. Clarify the question.
He wants a contact. He would love for me to say, hey, call Joe Smith and, he has money for property deals. But we're not out there for that. So where does he actually go to find those people?
For people who are advertising it, I would go to the first thing I would do is go to the vendor list on the Cincinnati Reps, your local RIA website or wherever you're a member at, because they're going to have the vendors, the self-proclaimed I'm a lender. So that's your easiest source right there. So anyone who's advertising is more of a hard money lender, not a private lender. Private lenders don't advertise because now they're no longer private.
Sure.
So I'm going to start with the RIA. Okay. That's kind of like my starting point for just about everything. My second thing is I had somebody found me recently. They found me on Google.
Okay.
So Google's a good resource. But again, now it's relying on somebody who is already putting themselves out there as a lender. Now, you also have to be very, very careful, because especially on Facebook, and I see it on Bigger Pockets and other things, where scammers are posing as private lenders. And I'm seeing people losing, you know, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of dollars to, quote unquote, pay for their application, pay for mortgage insurance, all these other things. And these scammers are just sucking money out of their pockets. So you've also got to vet whoever you're trying to work with and make sure they truly are a lender.
I mean, I would say too, they then, cause they're asking you for all your personal documentation, your tax returns and all that stuff, right? So they could be scamming you out of
the
all.
Scammers that. Don't.
Oh, the scammers don't?
There's two types of scammers. The first one's an upfront fee scam. They're just looking to collect as much money out of you as they can without doing much of anything.
Gotcha.
If somebody wants to go to full on identity theft, yeah, then they're going to do, you know, collect all that documentation. I mean, if I wanted to do identity theft, my God, I've got, you know, hundreds of pieces of information here.
Right.
But I don't like stripes.
Right.
You know,
you don't
so
look good in
I'm
orange,
not
do you?
Right. So there's some vetting on both sides. Just like I go vet the borrower, you know, when I was a dabbling as a private lender in the back of the room, people should have been vetting me and making sure that I'm not a scammer.
Right. Now, how about buy and hold loans? So buy and hold loans, you do mostly hard money lending. But where is the best source to find, you know, buy and hold loans?
Enders?
Go a little deeper.
If you're looking for private, Enders. Find the guys, who gals, the people who have built up their portfolio, and they're now creating kind of that excess cash, and they need someone else. They want somewhere else to put it that's going to go long term, but they don't necessarily want another tenant.
Sure. All right. How about another item is source of funds. So if I'm lending, whether I do it through somebody who already is lending, like I were to put some money with you, so I don't want to do, because I don't want to do the all the due diligence. Either that, or if I'm going to lend, what's the best place? Can I do that in my retirement account? Let me ask that.
Yeah. Source of funds. Any fund source you can direct can be used to lend money, to buy a note, to buy real estate. So that can be your self-directed IRA, and it's got to be truly self-directed with a custodian who understands what we do. Your typical, you know, Wall Street companies, forget about it. They can't do it. They know it exists, but they simply don't allow it. So your self-directed IRAs, 401ks, CISA accounts, HSA accounts, your LLC, any fund source that you can direct can do these kinds of deals. Now, if you're using retirement accounts, CISA accounts, HSAs, you have to be very careful to make sure that it comes out of there, it goes back into there. You know, you can't say, oh, well, I'm going to have my IRA buy this note for $50,000, but I want the interest payments to go to my personal account. No, 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 no. Bad juju. Just ask the accountant.
All right. So let's bring it about 2 minutes, maybe a little bit more, 2 or 3 minutes. So I'm going to thank Darren at the end, but I want to ask one thing is, if I'm a borrower and my deal goes south for some reason, there's a lot of things I can do. It could be a mistake I made as a borrower in the project, or it could just be, you know, like right now, you know, with things going, somebody can't get refinancing because of the interest rates and stuff. If a deal is starting to go south, you don't have much time, Darren, but give us maybe 2 or 3 things that I should do as a borrower to help mitigate the fallout.
So the very first thing is talk to your favorite friend, your lender. Especially someone like me with experience, I help people solve problems all the time. And we restructure things, we do extensions. Remember, I want my people to succeed. So that's your very first thing. Talk to that lender, whoever it is. Even if it's a bank, go talk to them. That's your number one thing. Quantify what's going wrong. What are my potential solutions? Now go talk to your lender and say, hey, I've run into these problems. I put the house up for sale, and I know my balloon is on July 30th. But it's not going to sell for that. Oh, great. Well, that's easy. Oh, you've been a great pair. We'll just extend it. No big deal. But do that. Do not put your head in the sand. Do not hide. All that does is annoy people.
What do you feel is the I guess from a borrower standpoint, when you look at one, what are the ones that have been most successful? We got about a minute and a half.
From the borrower standpoint, it's the borrower who understands how to bring in a good deal and understands it's a good deal. Those are the ones that always succeed. They always do well, because even if something goes wrong, there's cushion in there to make up for it. The ones that don't go well are ones like, well, if I skimp here and I skimp here and I tweak this a little bit here, then I can almost make some money. Those rarely go well. So make sure you have a good deal. And run the project like a business, run it efficiently. Those are the ones that I always see going well.
All right. Well, Darren, you have been a joy to have on this call, and you and I are good friends, and I just appreciate being able to interview you and just pulling your words of wisdom. I think it is good for people that want to be lenders, people that want to be borrowers. So, again, Saturday session a week from this Saturday, go to that, and OREA National Summit, which will be in this fall, starting October 31st. And Darren, thanks again, and we'll see everybody next time.
All right. See you later.
Thanks.